I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche! Monday night here on the download. Touche is in full effect tonight. Chris Roebling is here in for Dave Lundy. Jacob Meister.
Hey!
Thank you.
Lawyer, chairman of the Civil Rights Agenda, and a former candidate for U.S. Senate and the clerk of the Circuit Court. Jacob, thanks
Senate
for being here.
And clerk of the Circuit Court.
Double
it works.
Trouble.
It works for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's get to it, Chris. You guys ready?
Welcome. Good job.
Good jobs. Good jobs to have had. All right, let's get right to it. Today, the big news of the Senate Judiciary Committee finally has someone say
yes. I had it
yes.
on in the background.
You did. Sally Yates kind of gives a little bit of information in this testimony that conflicts with the Trump administration and possibly shines a little bit more light on the sort of, I guess, quote-unquote scandal of this thing.
Well, clearly there's a lot of stink on the Trump administration with Yates's testimony. I mean, even Lindsey Graham was highly critical. I think this is a story that we're going to see a lot of for a long time to come, and it doesn't look great for the Trump administration. We're going to see a lot from Paul Manafort, Carter Page,
who said thanks but no thanks in a more colorful way.
And Roger Stone.
We'll see about that.
It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Roger's been cruising for this bruising since I met him almost 40 years
ago. Do you agree with Jacob's assessment that we're
going
to hear about this story?
No, of course not. Jacob's all wrong about that. He got that all screwed up. There are two elements that Yates was brought in for. One is the Flynn conversation, and the other was her personal rejection of the president's first executive order on immigration. And I will tell you, the Flynn thing was very illuminating. And I think that is an area in which the Trump folks are going to have to, figure out what the heck, how never to get into that kind of problem again. And very briefly, having had the privilege of working in the intelligence field for a brief time, many thousands of years ago, what they worry about is compromise. And that is like from your entry on duty, your EOD, it is always about if you do something wrong, then you can be compromised and you can be coerced by the Soviets in those days, the Russians today. And so I give her credit and I give the DOJ credit for going to the White House and saying, this guy Flynn has got some issues. Okay, that's all terrific. And I thought that was really great. But on the other issue for which she was there, her ruling unconstitutional, this first EO. And Jacob's the lawyer on this panel, not me. But she had no citation. She had no case. She had no authority. I mean, she had authority in her office. She had the authority of her office. But she had no legal authority. She wasn't saying, under Smith and Jones, 1901, I know that this EO is unconstitutional. All she said was, I didn't like it. And I had to do my job. And I think that shows how fatuous and political. It was nakedly political. But, she's a very articulate person. And I think that she acquitted herself well in that regard.
I mean, as far as the executive order goes, I mean, it.
What was her authority? What authority did she cite?
What authority did the president have? That's the question.
President of the United States. His job is to write the executive orders. And the Office of Legal Counsel found it to be conforming and constitutional.
Well, but he's not a dictator, and he doesn't make law. He enforces law, and you can't twist and turn by executive order what only Congress can do under certain circumstances. And in this one, you run seriously afoul of constitutional limitations.
Well,
this was a religious ban.
Can I say something?
It's not a religious ban.
My son
is in Jakarta, Indonesia, as we speak. It is the largest Muslim population country in the world, and it's nowhere near the EO. Saudi Arabia is nowhere near the EO.
But Chris, here's an issue, I think.
Afghanistan, nowhere near.
of the two things that were brought up,
yes,
that one is one we want to know a little bit more. But I think we know that, yes, there were political reasons why she did not want
to. Well, she did it because she's an Obama holdover, and she wanted to throw sand in Trump's eye.
But I'm just saying, I think it's interesting that you choose that you want to talk about and not the,
no,
the stuff about Yates and Russia. I think it's not unlike with the Trump administration.
I started with Yates and Russia.
I know, but you said yes, but here's the big issue. But I don't know if that's that big of an issue, because it really was. She got fired for it. She's out. There's no lawsuit or anything in
there. Well, she had the advantage in the conversation today of saying, you know, a couple of courts have agreed with me. And that's never
thing to say. Turning to the Flynn issues.
Flynn. Right. Let's go back to
Turning to Flynn. I mean, she was very clear. Flynn. You know, the Russian efforts are clearly to undermine democracy. I mean, you've got Flynn on the payroll. Right. We now find out this weekend that the Trump family borrowed all the money for their golf courses from Russia. We have serious ties. We've got the dossier that comes out of the UK that shows that the campaign, the Trump campaign itself, was in the Ukraine meeting with, I think it was Ukraine.
And the only response from the Trump administration has been well, who told the press this?
The Clapper response about the dossier was, we could not confirm the sources. There are only, you know, if there are 38 items in the dossier, about two or three are being taken seriously. But with respect to these other issues, look, I think that let's not forget, I'm in the part, I left the Democratic Party in part because I lived in Finland and I realized that the Democrats didn't take Russia seriously back in 1972. So, I mean, I'm the one who's been serious about the Soviet Union then.
That's why you left the Democratic Party?
That was one
reason. And you were looking at Russia like, oh man, Russia's going to be in trouble. I'm out.
That's another story, which I'm happy to tell some other time. But
I don't want to bore Jacob on that.
But the Democrats have come late to the concern about Russia game. But I want to tell you, every drop of this has got to be gotten out. It's got to be dug up by Congress through these committees, and they have got to publish a definitive statement about what the heck happened, and everybody's going to have to take a look at it.
Chris Roebling, Jacob Meister in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about health care, what's going to happen in the Senate. Also, we'll do a quick roundup on the French elections, a little debrief on that. It's touche.
Thank you.
Here on the Downloads.
Bien sûr.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Chris Roebling, Jacob Meister in for Dave Lundy tonight. Touche. We're talking national politics. Chris, haven't had a chance to have you on since the health care vote came down last week. What do you think?
Big win for Trump. Big win for the House Republicans. This is a big coming of age moment for Paul Ryan, who desperately needed it. Now he's got to get 7 or 8 other legislative victories under his belt, because he's been pretty sort of confused and sort of wandering around the halls of Congress. You know, I think that the bill, I said on the air or somewhere, that it's a vehicle. I don't agree with the folks who are wailing and gnashing their teeth. I think it's a pretty good start, but this is not legislating. You don't legislate. I had the privilege of working in Congress. You don't legislate until you get to the conference committee. I mean, what you're doing now is engaging the conversation.
Right.
And I think, if the Republicans had not gotten it together to pass something, then they would all be swept away. But as it is, they've got something to talk about.
What's the danger in a bill that's not unpopular?
Well, first of all, it's not law. It's a disaster is for the Republicans. I think it's on the horizon. We saw the day after the vote, there were 20 Republican races that were downgraded, made it closer for the Democrats. I think the Democrats are going to make a lot of hay out of this. Let's face it. This is a disastrous health care bill for those. You know, they talk about, well, it provides access, but it makes health care unaffordable. It cuts $850 billion out of health care. You can't. The math won't work. You can't provide the health care to people. You cannot provide health care to people if you're cutting $850 billion out. Something's got to give somewhere. It's a lot of hocus pocus. And we're going to go to the Senate. The Senate is going to have one heck of a time. I mean, you already have Republicans, Susan Collins, Markowski, Portman, Capito, all saying, whoa, wait a minute, we have problems with this. They should have problems with it because they don't want to suffer the same fate that a lot of their colleagues
are going to work
the,
that all
the
out.
Are
they going to work that all behind closed doors because they want a united front of Republicans? They're going to come out and they're going to have the votes.
I think there's going to be a lot of work between now and the vote. I think there will be a vote. I think there will be a signing ceremony before the 4th of July recess. I think it would be better for the country if there was a signing ceremony before Memorial Day because of the cycle in the health care administration world, which basically June 1st is the start of their new year. I disagree with Jacob, and I would say respectfully, you know, Jacob is from the side that said if you want your plan, you can keep your plan. If you want your doctor, you can keep your doctor. We're founding this basis, this program on the idiocy and the stupidity of the American people. And I think the Democrats have been wrong from the beginning on this issue. That's why they lost 900 seats in state legislatures. They lost the House. They lost the Senate. They lost the White House. Jacob himself lost. And you know, you've got to look at this thing and say, this is a profoundly unpopular program. And I disagree with the fundamental assertion that Jacob is making, that this is going to take health care and remove it from the realm of so many Americans. That is not in any respect the case. In fact, I think what they did, I mean, we are talking about Iowa with no provider. How is that access? How is that health care? What is health care?
What is health care? We've got the Republicans who cut off the funding to make Obamacare work, the Affordable Care, you change over the last 4 years. They refused to fund the subsidies for the health care insurers. They refused to fund, and right here in the state of Illinois, our co-op, Land of Lincoln, went under because the federal government cut off the subsidies that were supposed to go to make that a solid insurance carrier. We can repair Affordable Care Act. It's a very workable system. It's a plan. I'm on it. I love my health care. A lot of people love their health care. Yes, every Democrat will tell you we need to repair, but don't repeal and replace. No. Repair it so that we can have health care that's affordable for everyone. What the Republicans are proposing rips health care away from 24 million people, and they say, well, everybody will have access, but it'll be
true.
Access that will
that's
be just, so expensive.
This is not
it's
true.
It's out of reach. For most Americans to be able to afford, who have pre-existing conditions, to be able to
that
afford
is untrue.
It. Untrue. We spend 16% of our GDP, and the next highest country in the world spends 9%. Something's wrong with our health care system. We got to fix it.
You know, I want to say that I think that Jacob is very earnest in his views. Okay, I think he's very sincere in being wrongheaded, and I you know grant him that. But the point here
you
is
say that with a smile.
When Jacob is standing up for a program where we are seeing increases in premiums of 25% to 116%, we're seeing deductibles that go to $7,500, deductibles that go to $10,000. You're talking about a practical limitation on access to care. So there are people out there with these care cards, and I don't think that the Democrats have it within them to care about the people who are not able to access the so-called health care that is behind that card. Why? Because those people are going to have a very hard time getting the $7,500 cold hard cash to put into the system so they can never get to any of the benefits. So the program that they came up with was fundamentally flawed, and Gruber, notwithstanding your passion just a moment ago, Jonathan Gruber himself personally in October said, quote, it is working precisely as we intended it to work. Okay, so you're saying it was all horrible because of the Republicans, and that's something we're used to hearing from Democrats. Jonathan Gruber, who is the guy who put it together based on the idiocy of the American people to be opaque and not tell them what they're doing, Gruber says it's working perfectly, and that was back in October. So you guys don't have your story straight.
It needs to be repaired. Every Democrat in Congress will tell you that.
Where is their bill? Who has sponsored that bill? You tell me a Democrat senator, who has put out a bill saying,
Democrat.
I'm the Democratic senator from Kentucky or wherever, and here is my bill to fix health care. Who's sponsoring that bill?
I think if they're asked to sit down and in a meaningful way, and there's a compromise bill that repairs it, they will be at the table. I can't tell you how many members of Congress I've talked to who hope that happens. They don't want this rammed down their throat, and they're not going to have anything
of
it.
All right. Let's move on. 1 minute. We got 1 minute on one French minute. Elections. That's all you get. 1 minute. So didn't I mean?
I think Macron is going to have to show by the people he recruits for these assembly elections all over France how committed he is to either reform or to stasis, and we're going to know because the folks that he recruits are either going to be real reformers or they're going to be holdover elitists.
Are you? Do you see this as sort of a pushback on the sort of Trump referendum, the Brexit referendum
yes,
that we were seeing?
I think there's a very similar divide going on in Europe, where you've got the you've got people who are disenfranchised, who long for what's in the past. You got a Macron who's in there saying we have to reform the economy, we need to keep the EU together, but we need to strengthen the EU. You know, fortunately, it happened because I it's a horror to think what would happen if the EU came tumbling down. You know, Le Pen was a scary character as well.
Le Pen has gotten better. She's not there yet. She did a terrible job in the debate, which I watched. And but I'll tell you, just like the Republicans can get themselves kicked the heck out of the House next year, if Macron does not put something on the table, if he doesn't get something going in the job, one in every five young French people, person, whatever, population, cannot get a job. They're absolutely structurally unemployed. And if he can't solve that and get that economy moving, he'll be kicked out and she'll be
very out. Similar to what's happened here. You know, you've got those who are the young,
under Obama,
the young, you know, those who were Bernie supporters feeling very disenfranchised. Yeah. And, you know, it's a very interesting.
Jacob Meister, Chris Roebling, Touche tonight in the download, Touché. Guys. Jacob, thanks for filling in tonight.
Absolutely.
Chris, see you next week.
Good to have you.